You can call me Doc Iggy. My full name at present is Dr. Ignotum P. Ignotius. The P stands for purr. If you're a Latinist, you'll realize that translates as the unknown explained by the still more unknown. I think it's a quite appropriate name for my function tonight, since Simon brought you here to be illuminized. My slave name, before I was turned on myself, is totally immaterial. As far as I'm concerned, your slave name is equally pointless, and I'll call you by the password of the Norton Cabal, which Simon used at the door. Until morning, when the drug starts wearing off, you are you, Wascal Wabbit. That's you, the initial, not Y-O-U, by the way. We accept Bugs Bunny as an exemplar of Mamu here, too. But otherwise, we have little in common with the SSS. That's the Satanist, Surrealists, and Sadists, the crew who began your Illuminization in Chicago. All we share with them, actually, is the use of the Tristero anarchist postal system to evade the government's postal inspectors and a financial agreement whereby we accept their DMM script, Divine Marquis Memorial script. And they accept our hemp script and the flax script of the Legion of Dynamic Discord. Anything to avoid Federal Reserve notes, you know. It'll be a while before the acid starts working, so I'll just chat like this about things that are more or less trivial, or quadrivial, or maybe pentivial, until I can see that you're ready for more serious matters. Simon's in the chapel with a woman named Stellar, who you'll really dig, getting things ready for the ceremony. You might wonder why we're called the Norton Cabal. The name was chosen by my predecessor, Malaclips the Younger, before he left us to join the more esoteric group known as ELF, the Arisian Liberation Front. They're the occidental branch of the Hung Mung Tong Kong, and all their efforts go into a long-range anti-Illuminati project known only as Operation Mindfuck. But that's another very complicated story. One of Malaclips's last writings before he went into silence was a short paragraph saying, "Everybody understands Mickey Mouse. Few understand Hermann Hesse. Hardly anyone understands Albert Einstein. And nobody understands Emperor Norton." I guess Malaclips was already into the mindfuck mystique when he wrote that.
"Who was Emperor Norton?"
Chow asks, wondering if the drug is beginning to work already, or Dr. Ignotius just has a tendency to speak more slowly than most people.
Joshua Norton, Emperor of the United States and Protector of Mexico. San Francisco is proud of him. He lived in the last century and got to be emperor by proclaiming himself as such. For some mysterious reason, the newspapers decided to humor him and printed his proclamations. When he started issuing his own money, the local banks went along with the joke and accepted it on par with U.S. currency. When the vigilantes got into a lynching mood one night and decided to go down to Chinatown and kill some Chinese, Emperor Norton stopped them just by standing in the street with his eyes closed, reciting the Lord's Prayer. Are you beginning to understand Emperor Norton a little, Mr. Wabbit?
A little,
Joe said.
A little. Well, chew on this for a while, friend. There were two very sane and rational anarchists who lived about the same time as Emperor Norton across the country in Massachusetts, William Green and Lysander Spooner. They also realized the value of having competing currencies instead of one uniform state currency, and they tried logical arguments, empirical demonstrations, and legal suits to get this idea accepted. They accomplished nothing. The government broke its own laws to find ways to suppress Green's Mutual Bank and Spooner's People's Bank. That's because they were obviously sane, and their currency did pose a real threat to the monopoly of the Illuminati. But Emperor Norton was so crazy that people humored him, and his currency was allowed to circulate. Think about it. You might begin to understand why Bugs Bunny is our symbol and why our currency has the ridiculous name Hempscript. Hagbard Chalene and his Discordians, even more absurdly, call their money Flax Script. That commemorates the Zen master who was asked, "What is the Buddha?" and replied, "£5 of flax." Do you begin to see the full dimensions of our struggle with the Illuminati? At least for now, you can probably grasp this much. Their fundamental fallacy is the anarchistic delusion. They really believe in law and order. As a matter of fact, since everybody in this crazy millennia-old battle has his own theory about what the Illuminati are really aiming at, I might as well tell you mine. I think they're all scientists, and they want to set up a scientific world government. The Jacobins were probably following precise Illuminati instructions when they sacked the churches in Paris and proclaimed the dawn of the Age of Reason. You know the story about the old man who was in the crowd when Louis XVI went to the guillotine and who shouted as the king's head fell, "Jacques de Molay, thou art avenged." All the symbols that de Molay introduced into masonry are scientific implements, the T-square, the architect's triangle, even that pyramid that has caused so much bizarre speculation. If you count the eye as part of the design, the pyramid has 73 divisions, you know, not 72. What's 73 mean? Simple. Multiply it by 5 in accordance with Weishaupt's Fünfwissenschaft, the science of fives, and you get 365, the days of the year. The damn thing is some kind of astronomical computer, like Stonehenge. The Egyptian pyramids are facing to the east where the sun rises. The Great Pyramid of the Mayans has exactly 365 divisions and is also facing to the east. What they're doing is worshipping the order they have found in nature, never realizing they projected the order there with their own instruments. That's why they hate ordinary mankind, because we're so disorderly. They've been trying for 6 or 7,000 years to re-establish Atlantis-style high civilization, law and order, the body politic, as they like to call it. A giant robot is what their body politic really amounts to, you know. A place for everything and everything in its place. A place for everybody and everybody in his place. Look at the Pentagon. Look at the whole army, for Goddess's sake. That's what they want the planet to be like. Efficient, mechanical, orderly, very orderly, and inhuman. That's the essence of the aneuristic delusion. To imagine you have found order, and then to start manipulating the quirky, eccentric, chaotic things that really exist into some kind of platoons or phalanxes that correspond to your concept of the order they're supposed to manifest. Of course, the quirkiest, most chaotic things that exist are other people, and that's why they're so obsessed with trying to control us. Why are you staring like that? Am I changing colors or growing bigger or something? Good. The acid is starting to work. Now, we can really get to the nitty-gritty. First of all, most of what I've been telling you is bullshit. The Illuminati have no millennia-old history. Neither do the Jams. They invented their great heritage and tradition, Jacques de Molay and Charlemagne and all of it, out of whole cloth in 1776, picking up all sorts of out-of-context history to make it seem plausible. We've done the same. You might wonder why we copy them and even deceive our own recruits about this. Well, part of illumination, and we've got to be illuminized ourselves to fight them, is in learning to doubt everything. That's why Hagbard has that painting in his stateroom saying, "Think for yourself, schmuck," and why Hassan I Sabah said, "Nothing is true." You've got to learn to doubt us, too, and everything we tell you. There are no honest men on this voyage. In fact, maybe this part is the only lie I've told you all evening, and the Illuminati history before 1776 really is true and not an invention. Or maybe we're just a front for the Illuminati to recruit you indirectly. Feeling paranoid? Good. Illumination is on the other side of absolute terror. And the only terror that is truly absolute is the horror of realizing that you can't believe anything you've ever been told. You have to realize fully that you are a stranger and afraid in a world you never made, like Hausman says. 22 big rhinoceroses, 23 big rhinoceroses. The Illuminati basically were structure freaks. Hence their hang-up on symbols of geometric law and architectural permanence, especially the pyramid and the Pentagon. God's lightning, like all authoritarian Judeo-Christian heresies, had its own share of this typically occidental straight-line mystique, which was why even the Jews among them, like Zev Hirsch, accepted the symbol first suggested by Atlanta Hope, that most Euclidean of all religious emblems, the cross. The Discordians made their own sardonic commentary on the legal and scientific basis of Lore V order, by using a 17-step pyramid. 17 being a number with virtually no interesting geometric, arithmetic, or mystical properties outside of Java, where it was the basis of a particularly weird musical scale, and topping it with the apple of discord, symbol of the unrational, ungeometrical, and thoroughly disorderly spontaneity of the vegetable world of creative evolution. The Arisian Liberation Front, ELF, had no symbol, and when asked for one by new recruits, replied loftily that their symbol could not be pictured, since it was a circle whose circumference was everywhere, and its center nowhere. They were the most far-out group of all, and only the most advanced Discordians could begin to understand their gibberish.
The jams, however, had a symbol that anyone could understand. And just as Harry Pierpont showed it to John Dillinger midway through a nutmeg high in Michigan City Prison, Dr. Ignatius showed it to Joe midway through his first acid trip.
"This,"
he said dramatically,
"is the sacred cow."
"That's a symbol of technocracy,"
Joe said, giggling.
"Well,"
Dr. Ignatius smiled,
"at least you're original. 9 out of 10 new members mistake it for the Chinese yin-yang, or the astrological symbol of Cancer. It's similar to both of them, and also to the symbols of the Northern Pacific Railroad and the Sex Information and Education Council of the United States, all of which is eventually going to lead to some interesting documents being produced at John Birch headquarters, I'm sure, proving that sex educators run the railroads, or that astrologers control the sex educators, or something of that sort. No, this is different. It is the sacred cow, symbol of Mamu, god of chaos. On the right, O nobly born, you will see the image of your female and intuitive nature, called yin by the Chinese. The yin contains an apple, which is the golden apple of Eris, the forbidden apple of Eve, and the apple which used to disappear from the stage of the Flatbush Burlesque House in Brooklyn, when Linda LaRue did the split on top of it at the climax of her striptease. It represents the erotic, libidinal, anarchistic, and subjective values worshipped by Hagbard Chileen and our friends in the Legion of Dynamic Discord. Now, O nobly born, as you prepare for total awakening, turn your eyes to the left, yang side, of the sacred cow. This is the image of your male, rationalistic ego. It contains the pentagon of the Illuminati, the Satanists, and the U.S. Army. It represents the anal, authoritarian, structural law and order values which the Illuminati have imposed through their puppet governments on most of the peoples of the world. This is what you must understand, O newborn Buddha. Neither side is complete or true or real. Each is an abstraction, a fallacy. Nature is a seamless web in which both sides are in perpetual war, which is another name for perpetual peace. The equation always balances. Increase one side, and the other side increases by itself. Every homosexual is a latent heterosexual. Every authoritarian cop is the shell over an anarchistic libido. There is no Vernichtung, no final solution, no pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And you are not Saul Goodman, when you're lost out here. Listen. The chaos you experience under LSD is not an illusion. The orderly world you imagine you experience under the artificial and poisonous diet which the Illuminati have forced on all civilized nations is the real illusion. I'm not saying what you are hearing. The only good Fenord is a dead Fenord. Never whistle while you're pissing. An obscure but highly significant contribution to sociology and epistemology occurs in Malignovsky's study, Retroactive Reality, printed in Vyechny Kvyat Vtazda, the Journal of the Polish Orthopsychiatric Society, for autumn 1959.
All affirmations
are true in some sense,
false in some sense, meaningless in some sense, true and false in some sense, true and meaningless in some sense, false and meaningless in some sense, true and false and meaningless in some sense. Do you follow me?
In some sense,
Chad mutters.
The author, Dr. Malignovsky, was assisted by three graduate students named Koshipsky 1, Koshipsky 2, and Koshipsky 3. Siamese triplets, born to a mathematician and hence indexed rather than named. Malignovsky and his students interviewed 1,700 married couples, questioning husband and wife separately in each case, and asked 100 key questions about their first meeting, first sexual experience, marriage ceremony, honeymoon, economic standing during the first year of marriage, and similar subjects which should have left permanent impressions on the memory. Not one couple in the 1,700 gave exactly the same answers to 100 questions, and the highest single score was made by a couple who gave the same answers to 43 of the questions. This study demonstrated graphically what many psychologists have long suspected. The life history which most of us carry around in our skulls is more our own creation, at least 7% more, than it is an accurate recording of realities. As Malignovsky concludes, reality is retroactive, retrospective, and illusory. Under these circumstances, things not personally experienced but recounted by others are even more likely to be distorted. And after a tale passes through five tellers, it is virtually 100% pure myth. Another example of the law of fives. Only Marxists,
Dr. Riggi concluded, opening the door to usher Joe into the chapel room,
still believe in an objective history. Marxists and a few disciples of Ayn Rand.